T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Late Night. This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI. Boston sports talk for insomniacs and the graveyard pack. Let's get it going with Patrick Gilroy. Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
It is Late Night right here, Sports Radio WEEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join me here, 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. Find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And while I understand that the World Series literally starts tomorrow night, and the Patriots are doing what they've done. We spent hours together last night talking about the Red Sox, talking about the World Series, talking about the Patriots, and we'll get there coming up a little bit later in the program tonight as well. But you heard my Twitter handle, right? I mean, it's Gilroy on Hoops, and our local Hoops team is not off to the start that Celtics fans would have liked this team to get off to. So I do feel the need to open up the program tonight talking about the Boston Celtics and, quite frankly, saying I told you so. And here's the problem and here's the point. I'm the biggest green teamer there is in this city. I will make excuses for this team. I will find ways to defend this team. And I'm still the guy that if they're down by 7 with 30 seconds to go, I can convince myself in a dozen different ways on how this team can come back and win the game. And my friends will tell you that this goes back to the early to mid-90s. And I thought that Todd Day could bring them back from down 7 with 30 seconds to go. So this is just who I am. But my expectations for this edition of the Celtics are what they've always been. I expect this team to be there at the end of the year. I expect this team to compete in the NBA Finals alongside the Golden State Warriors. I fully expect this team to be there. And I am not in the least bit surprised at their 2-2 start. I am not in the least bit surprised at their relatively poor level of play throughout these four games. I mean, I feel like they're somewhat lucky that they're 500 through four games. I do. And while, you know, losing at home to the Orlando Magic is never something that a successful team wants to do, you know, and you would hope that this Celtics team, no matter their flaws, no matter how disjointed they might look, they still have enough talent to, at least at home, beat a team like the Orlando Magic. And by the way, they nearly did that tonight. The Celtics shot about as poorly as you'll ever see them shoot, going 9 of 40 from 3. That's 22.5%. And despite all that, despite the fact that they allowed Orlando to do whatever they wanted to do offensively, the Celtics were still right there. And they got two of their best players pretty good looks in the final possession of the game. Kyrie Irving hits the rim on his three-point attempt, and then Gordon Hayward gets a beautiful look off the offensive rebound from Al Horford. And he just missed it. But when I tell you that this is not something that we need to worry about, I mean that. And I do want to talk Celtics fans off the ledge tonight, and that's what we're going to do for the majority, at least at the start of this program, because I wasn't surprised by it. But as the game was wrapping up, I hop on Twitter, and Celtics fans are panicking. I hop on Twitter, and the national trolls are starting to do what they do. Nick Wright, for one. I mean, he leads the trolling charge when it comes to the Celtics, and it's fine. But I'm telling you right now, you don't have to listen to Nick Wright. You don't have to listen to the other Twitter trolls out there. All you have to do is listen to me, because I'm going to be the voice of reason here over the course of the next couple hours. And I'm going to explain to you everything that we talked about throughout the summer and throughout the beginning portion of the fall here and into the preseason, into training camp, and eventually into the season. Because we've talked about all of the points that we'll go over tonight here on Late Night. See, the thing that the Celtics fans need to realize is while Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward and, yeah, Daniel Tice, nobody talks about Daniel Tice, but Daniel Tice is very much a rotational player that was removed from this team prematurely last year, and now he's also a rotational player that is working himself back in. And I know that he's a minor part compared to the other two, but Daniel Theis is a significant piece of this basketball team. He will very much be in the playoff rotation. So I ask you not to minimize the impact that he has on the floor and the impact that reinserting him into this lineup has on everybody else. But we're going to talk about Gordon Hayward. We're going to talk about Kyrie Irving, talk about Al Horford. And, of course, we'll talk about the struggles of Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, and, yeah, even Jason Tatum. Despite the fact that Jason Tatum is averaging 21 and 10 to start the season, 21 and 11, I mean, the numbers are great. He has launched himself directly towards being an all-star this year. The numbers alone sort of bear that out. He's been relatively inefficient this year. And the thing about this Celtics team that I noticed throughout these four games is that there's a lot of indecision, right? There's a lot of mistrust here with this team. And that flies in the face of the Celtics team that we saw outperform expectations through the back half of last season and into and in through the playoffs. And I think that right there, what I just said, the fact that this team, these players are struggling to trust one another is what's driving Celtics fans crazy. And that's what I want to get into through your heads tonight. It's natural that they don't trust each other right now. It's natural that they are second-guessing their decision-making right now. It's natural that they're pressing right now. And the NBA has done this team no favors, and not to make excuses for this team and not to put the blame on somebody else, on somewhere else, or deflect the blame. Because when you lose at home to the Orlando Magic, you've got to raise your hand and say, my bad, this is our fault. No matter how disjointed the Celtics team looks, and no matter how disjointed the Celtics team may actually be, losing at home to the Orlando Magic, who hadn't won a game this season, that's relatively inexcusable. But let's not forget that you're bringing back into the picture here Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. We've talked at nauseam about those two and what it's going to mean to reinsert them into this team, reinsert them into this lineup. But you're doing it in this new stage, new era of the NBA where you have a very, very shortened preseason schedule. You only have four exhibition games. Training camp is nothing like what it used to be. It used to be three full weeks of training camp and, you know, another 3 weeks of a dozen or so exhibition games. You don't have that right now. You just don't. The Players Association, the Players Union, did a good job advocating for the players. And, you know, a lot of teams realize that this is what it's going to be like in the first few weeks of the regular season, especially teams like the Celtics that have got a lot of work to do to work together to form this team as the union that I feel like they eventually will be. So it is Sports Radio WEEI. It is Late Night. I am Patrick Gilroy talking about your Boston Celtics, who lost at home tonight 93-90 to the Orlando Magic. And while that right there is going to be the headline, and that right there is the cause of the panic on Twitter, and that right there is the cause of the jeers from guys like Nick Wright, the trolling of guys like Nick Wright, and even trolling of local guys like Adam Jones. I mean, on the drive in here, I flip on Jones, and, you know, he can't wait to get on the air, I'm sure, and get all over Celtics fans because that's what he does. And he takes pleasure in doing that. But rather than do that, rather than sit here and commiserate together and try to accept the fact that this team isn't what we thought they were, I'm going to remind you guys that this team is exactly who I told you they will be. And patience is needed here. Patience is what I'm preaching tonight, and it's what I've preached all summer long. This team is going to look much different come January 1st of 2019. They are. They'll be the same players on the court, but the way that they play together is going to be drastically different, drastically improved. And it's not just a matter of guys getting comfortable with one another. It's not just a matter of guys trusting one another. You know, we'll get into that portion of it coming up after the first break here, because I feel like that part is important and that part requires a lot of time to sit there and actually analyze how Gordon Hayward coming back affects multiple players down that roster that had legit roles on this team last year. Right? Here's the thing. Right now, you've got guys looking over their shoulder, guys that are still really young in their NBA careers. Last year, Jaylen Brown did not have to look over his shoulder. You know, in his second year, he had free reign to do whatever he wanted, and it worked out for him, and it worked out for the Celtics, and we saw Jaylen Brown take massive, massive leaps. But we're also forgetting about the struggles and the inconsistency that Jaylen Brown showed through 75% of the season last year. Now, to his credit, he got much more consistent the last 30 days of the regular season and was one of their best players throughout their postseason run. But if you remember correctly, same thing with Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum got better as the season went along, which is what you want to see from a rookie. But nobody wanted to judge Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum based on their first four games last season. And now suddenly, because they've got 1 year under their belt, we want to sit here and overreact to what we're seeing. You know, Terry Rozier, he's a guy that as soon as Kyrie Irving got hurt last year, Terry Rozier had the luxury of not looking over his shoulder. You know, he was sharing minutes with Marcus Smart, and you know, that's essentially it. Shane Larkin was their third string point guard. And if you don't know who Shane Larkin is, there's probably a good reason. And this year, that guy is Brad Wanamaker. Right? If the Celtics team is going to do what we expect them to do, I should never have to mention Brad Wanamaker's name again. If he is playing significant time for this Celtics team at any point this season in games that matter, things have gone terribly wrong for your Boston Celtics. But here's what's happening, and it's very much a product of the Celtics not having enough practice time. It's very much a product of this Celtics team really not having been together for the amount of time that people think they've been together. And this is what really pissed me off on the drive in, and it's what we'll talk about coming up after the next break. I heard Adam Jones saying that, you know, this Celtics team, people are treating it like they're a new team. But really, there's no excuse because it's essentially year two for the majority of the roster. And while that is true in theory, it is not true at all. Because the Celtics team that finished up last season, that Celtics team that took Cleveland to seven games and really put a scare into LeBron James, that team is very different from this team. And that's what happens when you add two all-stars to the lineup. The domino effect affects everybody. It doesn't just apply to the coach. It doesn't just apply to the all-star players that are coming back. It applies to Jason Tatum. It applies to Jaylen Brown. It applies to Marcus Morris. It applies to Semi Ojeleye. It applies to Gershon Yabusele. You know, those were guys that were seeing some minutes. So it trickles all the way down to guys like that. And eventually, roles will be defined much as they were last year. And eventually, guys will be comfortable in the roles in which they play. And the one thing about this team that made them unique last year, and I feel like it's going to happen again this year, but it's going to take time, is everybody was confident enough in their roles. And everybody was secure enough in their roles that that really allowed Brad Stevens this unique luxury of legitimately changing his starting lineup dependent upon the opponent that they were playing. And that's why you saw Aaron Baines start quite a few games last year. Because if the Celtics felt like they needed a bigger body, they needed a real defensive presence, well, then it was Aaron Baines' time to shine. And then what does that do? You insert Aaron Baines at the five, Al slides back to his natural four, and Jaylen Brown or somebody like him comes off the bench. And that's a lineup we saw quite a bit last year. And quite frankly, this year, the Celtics have been more efficient and a drastically better defensive team when Aaron Baines has been in the games. Right now, he's out with a hamstring injury. But I'm telling you right now, the challenge here goes so much deeper than just reinserting Kyrie and Gordon Hayward into the lineup. When you look at Gordon Hayward right now, he has shown flashes, and I like the way that he played tonight. I really do. He was 3-for-5 from three, and the three that he hit were within his rhythm, and that's what I'm looking for from Gordon Hayward. But the challenge with Hayward when it comes to everybody else in the roster is this. He's not 100% back yet. We know that. He's still, working himself back into game shape. And he'll be the first one to tell you that. You know, nobody worked harder over the last year than Gordon Hayward in the NBA. I believe that with every fiber of my being. He outworked everybody to get back and get where he is right now. And he is in phenomenal physical shape. I will never sniff the kind of physical shape that Gordon Hayward is in right now. But you can tell that he's getting tired out there. He's getting winded out there. So that's another reason why the Celtics right now are limiting his minutes to 25 minutes a night. This is a guy that come playoff time, the Celtics will depend on for somewhere between 35 and 40 minutes a night. So that's 20% less, 20% fewer minutes that he's playing right now than what the expectation is. So again, even when this team gets comfortable with one another, there's going to be another step that has to take place because Hayward's minutes are limited right now, and Hayward is not playing in back-to-back games. That is going to prolong this period of time, where Celtics fans are getting frustrated because you're seeing a very inconsistent product. You will not see consistency from this team, in my opinion, for at least the first 2 months of the season. So that's what we're going to talk about here tonight on Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. I implore you guys, let's relax, let's take a deep breath, we'll work our way through this, and I promise you, by the end of this exercise together, we'll all be on the same page, and the Celtics will once again be the belle of the ball and the team that you guys feel like has the best shot to knock off the Golden State Warriors or at least give them a fight as far as competition from the Eastern Conference goes. The Twitter overreaction is just, if I could, if I didn't have this job, I would stay the hell off of Twitter. And by the way, the other part of this that I love is the fact that the Celtics aren't playing well, and that gives Brad Stevens the ability to add some fuel to this fire. And I love his reaction after the game tonight, essentially calling out his team and saying, look, we are not even close to as good as the national media has made us out to be. And I love that. Because last year, he had to create a false narrative when he had to go on the air and say, you know, I know we've won 16 games in a row, but we're not nearly as good as that winning streak really would indicate. Well, when you win 16 in a row, it's hard to get guys to buy into that. It's hard to get guys to believe in that. But right now, these guys are going to hang on every word that Brad Stevens says. They are. And they're going to trust in their coach. But the best part about the next week here for the Celtics is they've only got 3 games over their next 8 days. And I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be perfect, but it will be better. So at the tail end of this next 8 days, they've got 3 games in these 8 days. They've got OKC, they've got Detroit, and they've got somebody else. But by the end of this trip, they come home for that one game at the first day of November or last day of October. That'll be the tail end of this 8-day stretch. The Celtics will look drastically better than they look tonight because they're going to have multiple practice days inserted in there. They've just got through playing 3 games in 4 nights. That's why they look so disjointed. There's been no practice time. And if you've listened to Brad Stevens and paid attention to what Brad Stevens has been saying since the moment he arrived in Boston 5 years ago, he is a guy that preaches practice time. And the evidence is there. There is evidence if you just go to ESPN.com and look at the Celtics splits and look at their wins and losses over the last 5 years, look at how this team plays when they've got the opportunity to practice together. They really haven't had that. They've been thrown full force into this sort of advanced schedule since they hooked up together for training camp about a month ago. They went from media day, and in the same week as media day, they started playing preseason games. That is nearly unheard of in the NBA. You only get 4 of those preseason games, and you didn't even have the luxury of playing the guys that needed to play the most throughout all 4 of those games. You know, Kyrie missed time, Al Horford missed time, and Gordon Hayward missed time. So these guys have barely played. They have not even played 4 games together because Gordon Hayward had to sit out the second night of a back-to-back. So Hayward's played 3 games since missing an entire season, and everybody is jumping down his throat. Everybody's jumping down this team's throat, and I don't understand it. You guys are smarter basketball fans than what I'm seeing on Twitter. And I hope that what I'm seeing on Twitter and what I'm hearing from the other guy on the other station doesn't represent really the basketball intelligence that I think that this city has. Because this is BS. If this is really what it's going to be, then I feel bad for this team. And I feel bad for Brad Stevens because your expectations are completely unrealistic. You know, this is not a team that's returning their stars from last year and making a secondary run here to try and make the NBA Finals. That is not the case at all. The team that made the NBA Conference Finals last year in the Eastern Conference is drastically different from the team that took the court tonight. It is. I'm sorry, but it is. That team, and maybe that team is better. Maybe the Celtics made a mistake, huh? Maybe they're better off without Kyrie Irving. Is that what we think? You know, is this team better off in the long run without Gordon Hayward? Is that what we think? Are we forgetting that this team completely collapsed unto itself like a dying star in the last 5 minutes of Game 7 last year at home because they didn't have that one guy, they didn't have that second guy that's capable of taking a game over in the closing minutes of a playoff game? Because that's what Kyrie Irving is getting paid big money for. And that's why he's going to get a max contract from the Celtics at the end of the season. Because he's one of a handful of players in the league capable of putting a team on his back in the closing moments of a playoff game. But if you want to judge him for what he didn't do in November or in October against the Orlando Magic, then you're not really a basketball fan and you're not really paying attention. So we're going to talk about the Celtics tonight, and God willing, I'm going to talk myself along with you guys off of the ledge. We're all going to look forward to January 1st, 2019. That is going to be the magical date where you start to see a different version of the Boston Celtics. Until then, There's going to be some great moments. There'll be some games where this team looks legit. There will be a handful of games where this team looks like world beaters. But I'm sorry to tell you, and I hate to break the news, there's going to be other games where we're left with our mouths wide open, our jaws just dropping in disbelief at how bad they looked. That's what you get when you have a disjointed team that's in desperate need of A, being in better shape, B, needing more trust with one another, C, desperately needing more practice time. Indecision is the name of the game, and that's what I saw from the Celtics tonight. That's what I saw from the Celtics in New York. It's even what I saw from the Celtics on opening night. This team is second-guessing every single offensive touch of the basketball. That won't be the case come January 1st, 2019, and we'll continue to talk about that when we come back right here, Sports Radio WEI.
Marcus Smart is going to make the pass in. 7.8 left in the game. Boston down three.
Let's see if they get it to Kyrie.
They do. Takes it from the corner. No. Horford back outside. Haywood will try. No. And the Magic have come to Boston and beat the Celtics 93-90.
A frustrating finish to a frustrating night at the TD Garden. You could hear it in Mike's voice there. And nobody can paint the picture of a game better than Mike Gorman, in my opinion. He is the best at what he does, and you can generally tell how the Celtics are doing by the inflection in his voice. On neither one of those attempts, if you listen closely to the way that Gorman really made the call, he didn't believe that either shot was going to go in before the shots were even launched. And that's very much unlike what you get from Mike Gorman. Mike Gorman's the same guy that believed that Sherm Douglas could consistently hit a three. But this team tonight, and we've seen this consistently throughout the preseason and in through the first four games of the regular season, they are struggling to hit the three. And this is something that's going to continue to haunt the Boston Celtics. So it is Sports Radio WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. There is room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937 as we talk about the Boston Celtics. We have to have this group conversation, this group effort, I believe, to reset our expectations in the short term for this basketball team. And it's why I cautioned everybody over the course of the summer and continue to caution everybody throughout the first month of the season, including training camp, the exhibition schedule, and now through the first four games of the season. Because while expectations nationally are very high for this basketball team, and with good reason, by the way, there's a reason why Las Vegas has picked them as the number two team in the NBA and the team most likely to play the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. You know, Vegas doesn't take a short-term approach when they're picking these teams that are going to represent each conference in the finals. They take a full, long-season approach, and I feel like that's what Celtics fans have to do. There was this very irresponsible sort of undertone throughout the course of the second half of the summer. So as we were making our way through late July and in through August, when the national publications started coming out with their NBA predictions in earnest, and, you know, Gordon Hayward, he was releasing the videos on the Players Tribune and on Twitter, and we heard from Kyrie Irving, and he had started to change his tune a little bit. There was this very irresponsible take that really got picked up, and it never made sense to me, and we discussed it here on Late Night quite a bit. You know, there was this comparison to the 2008 Celtics, saying that this team is a similar team to what that 08 team was. And then I heard it again tonight driving in here from Jones on the other station, and my jaw dropped because Jones knows basketball. I worked with him at ESPN Boston. He's not a dummy. So I feel like some of the stuff that he says is fake or contrived because there's zero chance that he actually believed that this team should come into this season and play as well out of the gate as that 2008 Celtics title team. Now, the fact that 2008 Celtics title team played as well as they did coming out of the gate was a complete surprise to most national pundits. That team was supposed to win a championship probably in year two. And looking back, we're all very grateful that they pulled it off in year one because year two, KG had his first of many knee injuries that really derailed the back half of his career. He was never quite the same again coming off that knee injury that he had in 2009. So it's a damn good thing they got it done in 08. But the reason why, one of the reasons why that team was able to gel together and really play so well together and almost behave and have this appearance like this team had been together for many, many years It's because all of those guys, from the stars, from Paul Pierce to Ray Allen to Kevin Garnett, to the guys that were fill-in pieces, like a James Posey, like a Sam Cassell, you know, these guys were all north of 30. These guys could all see their own basketball mortality, and at this point, at this stage in their game, they were willing to do whatever it took to win basketball games and put themselves in a position to experience prolonged postseason success, because it's something that none of them had ever really done individually before. And when your leaders are doing that, and they're still, by the way, in their primes, you know, this isn't the Brooklyn Nets version of Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. No. You know, this was Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, still very much in their primes, just in the back half of their primes, right? But they were all able to see their own basketball mortality, and that is a very powerful thing. And despite the fact that they were all north of 30 years old, two out of the three were not coming off the types of injuries that these Celtics are coming off of. Now, Ray Allen, the year prior, he had had double ankle surgery, but he had already made the comeback with Seattle, right? He had already made his comeback from the double ankle surgery. And no, at that point, he wasn't quite the same Ray Allen that he had been in years past, but at least he had made it through the recovery phase, got his timing back, and was a very effective basketball player and wound up returning to all-star Ray Allen form. That's a very different situation from the one the Celtics are dealing with right now with Gordon Hayward. And if you listen to Celtics postgame, and you can find all this stuff on Twitter, and we'll have the sound coming up a little bit later in the program, Gordon Hayward is telling everybody that's worth listening to right now, saying, listen, you know, my ankle still hurts. It hurts after every game. And if you listen to the words that he's saying, it's not coming as a surprise. This isn't something that Celtics fans should take and say, oh, crap, Gordon Hayward's not healthy. Gordon Hayward's not going to be all right. This is something that the Celtics, their training staff, Gordon Hayward, Brad Stevens, all anticipated and planned for. And that, by the way, is the reason why Gordon Hayward is on a minutes restriction. This, by the way, is the reason why Gordon Hayward is not playing in back-to-back games to start the season. What he did to that ankle was unnatural. Now, the good news is he didn't really hurt the tendons. He didn't really hurt the muscles. But structurally, putting this thing back together again, I mean, it's essentially, you know, Humpty Dumpty. And it's done with crazy glue and screws and rods. Now, the good news is the doctors say that eventually that ankle will be stronger than the one that God gave him. And that is damn good news. But he's still got to deal with, A, the uncertainty in his brain that every single time he plays, until he plays, I don't know, 20 times, 30 times, 50 times, 100 times, how many times is it going to take him to go up and back down on that ankle before he stops thinking about it collapsing again? He's got to deal with the psychological part of it. And he's also got to deal with the physical part of it. And this is yet another reason why this Celtics team may struggle, especially when they play three games in four nights.
I mean, there's soreness in my ankle after I play every time right now. I think there'll be soreness for a little while. Like I said, I think it was something we planned on doing that. That's why I'm on a minutes restriction as well. Like, my ankles, they don't want anything, any overloading issues. So there's some load management stuff, basically.
Load management, that's the term that they're using, but this is not new information. It's just new that he's coming out with it publicly. And it might be a way for this team, or a way for Gordon Hayward to deflect away from the fact that they lost to an abysmal team at the Garden tonight. And maybe that's what it is. But I feel like there also needs to be a re-education of Celtics fans here, because the expectations were ridiculously and unrealistically high for this team out of the gate. And again, I'm not telling you that my expectations are any different right now than they were when I told you that I expect this team to go to the NBA Finals. But I also expect this team to maybe win a few fewer games than they did last year. They were a 55-win team last year. I believe Vegas has the over-under at 58.5, and I told you guys to go heavy on the under, because the first 2 months of this season is going to be very much a work in progress. It is going to be extended preseason for this team in a lot of ways. Now, because of their talent level, they'll hang around. You know, there'll be a few games over 500. They'll go on a few nice little runs where they win 4 out of 5 times. But they very well may go on a couple of disappointing runs where they lose 4 games in 5 nights. There's not going to be that fluidity that we're looking for. There is not going to be that consistency that we're looking for until psychologically both Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, for that matter, are over their injuries. And then psychologically, this team once again earns that trust in one another that was such a hallmark and staple of this team throughout the second half of last year and into the postseason. But I find it so hilarious. I guess that's the word I'm looking for, that I hop on Twitter after a game like this, and suddenly, you know, everybody that had picked the Celtics to be an NBA Finals contender, after four games, they're changing their pick. You know, suddenly it's Toronto. Suddenly it's the Sixers, because the Celtics, you know, through the first four games of the season, they're 2-2, and they don't look all that good. And I think to myself, if those guys, if those people like Nick Wright are going to make a judgment call on this Celtics team after four games, what are they going to be saying after 20 games? What are they going to be saying after 25 or 30 games? Because at that point, that's right around the time where I expect this team to start rounding into form, assuming health. Really, I mean, I think it's going to take that long. When you reinsert just Gordon Hayward into the lineup, you look at the domino effect that it has on guys that were dependent on last year. You know, there was talk about Jaylen Brown potentially breaking through to an all-star level this year, and that still may very well happen, but it's going to have to happen in a different role than he had last year. He's not going to have that luxury that he had last year of not looking over his shoulder. He's got somebody right next to him right now that is a current or former NBA All-Star still in the prime of his career. And for the Celtics to reach the heights that they expect to reach, for this Celtics team to have an opportunity to go to the NBA Finals, they ain't going to get there without the best version of Gordon Hayward. They're not. It's not going to happen. Yeah, in the short term, maybe the Celtics would win more games right now if they sat Hayward down and they said, Jaylen Brown, you've got the same role you had last year. But they might win more games right now if they did the same thing for Kyrie Irving. And I don't think anybody is willing to sit those guys down so this team can win October games. You know, maybe you can appease Adam Jones. Maybe you can appease Nick Wright. But you're not going to appease me, because that is such a short-term, short-sighted, narrow-minded approach. And the fact that there's people that consider themselves basketball guys that take that approach is mind-bending to me. It really is. You know, people seem to forget. We talk so much about the accomplishments of last year's Celtics team, and I don't want to take anything away from that team. But that's also a team that came dangerously close to losing to the Bucks much earlier on in the playoffs. If it weren't for Semi-flippin' Ojeleye saved the season last year, because when he was reinserted into the lineup, he gave fits to the Milwaukee Bucks and to the Greek Freak. All right, Semi Ojeleye saved your season. Not Jason Tatum, not Jaylen Brown, not Scary Terry. It was Semi Ojeleye that propelled this team beyond the Bucks. And that takes nothing away from what those other guys did and from what they accomplished. And to take nothing away from the fact that it is an accomplishment for a team that was down two All-Stars to go to Game 7 of the Conference Finals and to be within minutes of taking LeBron James and ending his era of dominance in the Eastern Conference in style here at the Garden. I don't want to take anything away from that. But we seem to forget that, yeah, the accomplishment of getting there was great. But the accomplishment is nothing, because the Celtics weren't able to win. And why weren't they able to win? Because with 5 minutes to go, they didn't have the quality of player on their team that was capable of taking games over in the closing moments of playoff games. Those guys are few and far between. We were spoiled rotten here in Boston watching Paul Pierce do it for the majority of his career, going all the way back to the comeback against the Nets in 2002, where he and Antoine Walker would not let this team lose. You know, they had that in their DNA. Paul Pierce had that in his DNA. But more importantly, he had the ability to play an ugly, slow-down game. And when the defense decided to double-team him, he was one of the few people in the league that was capable of getting to the line, stopping the clock, stopping momentum. You go back and watch those last 5 minutes of the Celtics season last year, and there's a reason why Cleveland was able to run away with it, because they got momentum and they never let it go. And then what did they do? They had LeBron James, and they had veteran pieces and veteran players. They were able to grab that momentum and then drag the thing out by getting to the free throw line. Meanwhile, Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were jacking bad threes, you know, contested threes, because they didn't have the NBA experience to know how to handle the closing moments of critical playoff games. That's where you missed Gordon Hayward. That's where you missed Kyrie Irving. So sure, in theory, if you bench those two guys right now, just bench them. Say to hell with it. Last year's Celtics team was better, so we don't need you guys. the Celtics will win plenty of regular season games. They will. And they'll be in the same position they were in last year when they don't have the studs on the floor that are capable of closing out playoff games. I'm telling you, have some patience with this team. The patience will pay off later on in the season. And if they don't, you can come for me, all right? Right here on Guest Street in Brighton, you can blame Gilroy. But I'm telling you, if you just take a different approach and you don't look at every game like it's Game 7 of the damn conference finals, and you take each game as its own unique learning process here, then this Celtics team is going to be a pleasure for you to watch, and you'll enjoy watching them get incrementally better game in and game out. And I expect the first real bits of incremental improvement to start almost right away, because now the Celtics had four games in their first 6.5, 7 days of the season. All right, the season just started on the 16th, and here we are, the 21st, 22nd, whatever it is. So they had four games in that span. But now they've got three games over their next 8 days. They've got a couple of days off right now. You'll give some rest to Gordon Hayward's ankle, and more importantly, this team will get back to practice, and practice is where that trust is going to be formed. Practice is where the rotations are going to be ironed out, and I'm telling you, practice is where this team is going to make those incremental improvements that will result in much prettier Boston Celtics basketball that translates to wins, that translates to happy fans, and translates to none of this crap that's on Twitter tonight, because this stuff is so below what I'm used to seeing Boston Celtics fans behave like. You know, this stuff should be reserved for bowing out of the playoffs. That's what tonight's reaction was worthy of. This short-sightedness, I just expect a lot more from Celtics fans. So it is Sports Radio, WEEI. It is Late Night. Look, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports. You guys know him on Twitter as Stool Greeny. He's going to help us continue to talk Celtics fans off the ledge tonight. And I might have to talk Dan off the ledge too, but he and I know this. We were in agreement about a month ago that the first month or two of this season could potentially get ugly at times. I just want to see if Dan still feels that way or if he's like everybody else and has already jumped off the bridge. It is Sports Radio, WEEI.
We have a lot of work to do, that's for sure. How many preseason games did we play? Three? I mean, we didn't play well in the four. We didn't play well in those either, so... we have a lot of work to do. I have no doubt we'll figure it out, but definitely a lot of work to do.
That's really been the message here on Late Night. It's the Celtics have got work to do. But again, it doesn't come as a surprise to me. Losing at home to the Magic, I guess, is always surprising in a way. But the fact that this team is 2-2 and they've struggled, it's been a struggle to get to 2-2, is not a surprise to me at all. If you listen to the program throughout the summer, if you listen to the program throughout the first few weeks of training camp in through the exhibition season, I told you this team is not going to hit the level that we're all expecting this team to reach until sometime in early 2019. Again, it sucks. It's painful to watch. But it really, at this point, it's all about practice time. It's all about consistency. It's all about trust on the floor with one another. And again, the thing that I take out of these games, when you go back and watch them a second time, which unfortunately is part of the job here, right? I've got to go back and watch these games sometimes a second and third time. The one thing that I continue to see game in and game out, the most consistent thing that I see from this team, is this indecision and lack of trust between these guys that you would expect to fully trust one another. But they are second-guessing each and every offensive possession that they seem to have. It is Sports Radio, WEEI, it is Late Night. So I have done my best to sort of try and talk everybody off the Twitter ledge. And I don't know if I've done a good enough job really doing that at all tonight. Because the fact is this, I still go on Twitter right now and people are still, you know, writing off the Celtics four games into the season. So I did call in some backup. I called in some help. And here to help me talk Celtics Nation off the Zakem, assuming he's not there himself, from Barstool Sports, it's Dan Greenberg. Dan, how we doing, man?
Well, you know, I've played a few hours of 2K, so I have to admit my spirits are a little higher than they were just a few hours ago.
I mean, really, four games into the season, this team is 2-2. It's really been a struggle to get to 2-2. Even that Philly game, the shooting was somewhat abysmal. They were able to just, you know, win on talent, I felt like. Getting by New York was a struggle, probably too much of a struggle. And tonight, look, the Celtics, the good news, in my opinion, is they played terrible basketball. Like, terrible basketball, 9 of 40 from 3. And despite that, they still had two opportunities to tie this thing up. So the optimist in me says, the talent alone is going to keep this team in games. But what have you seen through four games?
Well, I think we're learning that even with the additional talent of Hayward, I mean, this collection of guys is still going to have the same frustrations, the same, you know, mind-boggling three-point shooting nights that they had last year. And one thing we've noticed is if you watch this team, you know that the teams that they're supposed to blow out, they never blow out, and the teams that they're not supposed to win, they somehow pull it out. So, like you said, you weren't too surprised by it. I mean, this Magic team just played the Sixers really tough, and J.J. Redick hit a big three to sort of save that game. Our reality was Hayward and Kyrie missed their big three to sort of play that same role. So it's just a matter of, you know, they're going to be the hunted, and they're going to have teams coming out them and playing like this is their finals. So we haven't seen that continuity and confidence that I think we all were expecting, but the season's not even 5% of the way through, so it is a little early.
Dan, coming into the segment there, you heard a clip, you heard a cut from Gordon Hayward, and he specifically mentioned something that I started the show off tonight with, and that in this new NBA, you've got a condensed preseason, a condensed training camp that's nothing like it used to be in years past where you played 10 games in the preseason schedule. You had nearly 3 weeks to a month of training camp. So right now, this team's really only been together for about a month. And at that, they're not fully healthy. You still have Gordon Hayward on a minutes restriction, not playing back-to-backs. So is there something to the fact that this team is sort of suffering from the new NBA, where maybe they would have been better off with a full training camp, with an old-school exhibition schedule?
It's hard to say. Because, I mean, if you look at them just over the last few games, I mean, my frustration has mostly been their situational awareness. I mean, this is a team that's getting into the bonus with 8 or 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they're not taking any free throws. They're doing nothing but shoot threes and long twos. And you're just – obviously you would think that, you know, if they had a longer training camp or they had more preseason games, they'd look more like a cohesive unit. But at the same time, these are still veteran basketball players that need to know the situation. So for me, I don't see that as an excuse. They just – you know, they haven't shot the ball well since game five of the Eastern Conference Finals. So it's one of these where they just need a game where they shoot like 55%, make 16 threes, and just see the ball go in. Because right now you can tell they're not even shooting, they're aiming, and that's where you get into trouble.
It's Sports Radio WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. On the line with me right now from Barstool Sports, it's Dan Greenberg. And Dan, when I watch this team, I'm watching a team that they just aren't displaying that sort of trust that we came to expect from this team last year. That trust is not there in one another. To me, I'm watching them second guess every single pass on the offensive end, and it's almost like they're fighting themselves to not play hero basketball, and they're overpassing the basketball. I'm watching them give up good shots to give it off to a teammate who's going to take a worse shot. Is this just something that's going to come with time?
Yeah, that's the stuff that I think comes as they play more minutes together, as lineups get comfortable together. Because you're right. I mean, they start possessions off with great ball movement, but then there's two or three extra passes that, you know, you can tell nobody wants to be selfish enough and take that open shot. And then as a result, you're looking at a higher contested shot with maybe, you know, 5 or 6 seconds on the shot clock where, you know, guys are starting to feel the clock a little bit. So I think the more that they run through it and the more that they can play together, you'll start to see that overpassing sort of go by the wayside. But I totally agree with you. Right now, it's like they're playing a game of hot potato where, you know, you're open, but then you're thinking, okay, maybe Hayward's open. And then he's thinking, well, you know, you were open before, so let me give it back to you. And it's just, you know, they're playing discombobulated basketball.
So much has been made about Gordon Hayward and the comeback, not playing for a year after the devastating injury. Look, we got to follow his progress through the Players Tribune, through Twitter, and everybody sort of expected, because there was so much optimism surrounding Gordon Hayward going into the season, that he was going to sort of pick up where he left off in Utah. I thought that was a crazy assertion. And to me, I find myself, I'm pretty much satisfied with what I've seen from Hayward so far this year. What have you thought about Gordon Hayward, and how much better do you think he's going to get here as the season goes along?
Well, a ton better. I mean, he's still learning how to trust that ankle, and he's still getting his basketball legs under him. But if you compare just tonight to what we saw on opening night, they're completely different players, in my opinion. I mean, even already we're starting to see, you know, Hayward make plays off the dribble, be a more of a facilitator, a playmaker, driving into the paint and finding his teammates. So those are the things that excite me, because that's what he did in Utah. You know, you can run the offense through him. You can run him in high pick and roll and let him make a good basketball decision. The shooting and the mid-range, that's all going to come. So for me, it's just been, how has he looked mentally? Is he trusting his ankle? You saw him dunk tonight. You saw the block, you know, early in the preseason where he landed on the ankle and was fine with it. So for me, I'm not too concerned with his shooting splits or anything like that. I mean, I think his defense still has a long way to go, but Brad is trusting him and giving him these, you know, high-end Kawhi Leonard, Ben Simmons assignments. So all things considered, I'd give him, you know, one of the better grades of the team to start, but he's going to be so much better by, like, March, we're not even going to recognize it.
The other Celtics all-star that came back is Kyrie Irving, and he had 22 points tonight. He was relatively inefficient. That's been my biggest knock on him this season. But there's been a lot of speculation around Kyrie Irving because he hasn't played, again, to the level that we expect him to play. To me, when I watch Kyrie Irving, I'm almost relieved. I know that the shooting is going to come. I know the offense is going to come. I know the trust in the teammates is going to come. But the one thing that's obvious to me is that athletically, he hasn't lost a step. Physically, he's just as dominant as he's ever been. A lot of this is just timing and shooting issues. But again, if you go on Celtics Twitter here, people are sort of starting to panic when it comes to Kyrie Irving and his lack of an ability to look like the Kyrie that we've come to know over the last 6 or 7 years. So when you see Kyrie Irving play, what's going through your brain?
Well, I think he's getting the standard Celtics point guard treatment. I mean, Rondo went through it when he couldn't hit a jumper. You know, Isaiah would have a bad game and people would be jumping down his throat. I think last year people were sort of, you know, not willing to really criticize Kyrie, but now that he started so slow, I mean, he's working his way back into shape. You have to acknowledge that. But he's not getting to the line. He's settling for these long two-range, you know, contested jumpers. He doesn't have that same efficiency that will be coming. So for me, I care more is he, you know, showing up when it matters. And I think, you know, the performance that he had down the stretch in New York was big. He's getting his teammates involved. He's rebounding. So you have to live with some of his shots, because even if he's missing them, those are the ones you have to trust he's going to make, you know, 2, 3, 4 months from now, and then once obviously the playoffs start. But I do think it's also fair to expect more from a guy who is essentially your best player and your franchise guy who you're going to be paying $35 million to. If we all love to obsess over that, you know, we need him to be playing at an all-NBA level for this sort of whole puzzle to work, and he hasn't been there just yet, but you know, hopefully he does get there.
Well, that's the thing. It's all about hopefully. But when you look at this team and, you know, you reinsert those two guys, they are, despite the fact that Gordon Hayward is only playing 25 minutes a night and he's not playing on back-to-backs, the fact is this. Those two guys were not playing last year, especially the back half of the season and into the playoffs. That left more minutes available for the remaining guys on the roster. So since these two guys have come back relatively healthy and been reinserted into the Celtics starting lineup, who's been the biggest casualty? You know, who has been affected the most by their return?
Well, I think everybody's been affected to some degree. I mean, the easy answer is Jaylen. I think he's probably had the slowest start out of them all. I think he just looks a little bit lost. But I think, you know, Horford is taking his normal sacrifice of, you know, some days he's going to have 10-plus shots. Other days he's only going to have 6 or 7. So I think that's just what we're going to see on a night-to-night basis, where guys are going to rotate in their usage and in their involvement. But for whatever reason, I think Jaylen is pressing. I think some of his big corner three was huge, but really you didn't really find him. You didn't really feel his presence at all, which was shocking. You know, he's having his struggles on the defensive end, and that's the stuff that would annoy me if I was Brad, because, you know, you don't need the ball to be a good defender. So the fact that he's not defending at the level we need to him, I think, is a bigger issue than, you know, his only 5 points tonight or whatever it was. But I also think you can't ignore the bench. I mean, Morris and Terry haven't been that efficient. I think it's just guys. We saw this in the preseason where the offense was stagnant and they couldn't buy a bucket. We just kind of said, hey, it's preseason. This doesn't matter. it sort of just translated over into the first, you know, week of the season.
But do you look at that and say it's an adjustment to these new roles? I mean, I look at a guy like Jaylen Brown, and last year, whether he deserved it or not, because of the Hayward injury, he never really had to look over his shoulder. He never had to worry about Brad taking him out of the game. He could make multiple mistakes, learn from those mistakes, and never have to worry about it affecting his playing time. And I feel like this year, he's another guy that's almost second-guessing himself. He looks a little bit hesitant out there. He's thinking too much on the basketball court instead of just playing. And I feel like that might be one of the few sort of negative products of these two guys coming back.
Yeah, I mean, he still played just over 30 minutes tonight. So I think Brad, and he played, I think, 38 minutes against the Knicks. So for me, I see his role as Brad is going to leave him in if he can defend. So the minute if he makes, you know, mistakes on offense, if he doesn't take a good shot or anything like that, I think he's earned that respect where Brad is going to leave him in. It's when he falls asleep on defense and doesn't bring that intensity, that's when you're going to see his playing time sort of, you know, be messed with, or maybe they're going to go more Hayward, or that's when maybe Morris plays more, maybe Smart. But I still think, you know, for Jaylen, it's just important for him to know what his role is, to figure that out, and it's on the defensive end first. I think, you know, the more that they figure out the offensive flow and the ball movement and guys are getting, you know, good shots, that's all going to come. But if Jaylen can't defend, then Brad has to take him out. That's just how Brad is.
One more before I get you out of here. Some positive news is we look at Jason Tatum. He's been sort of inefficient, but he's averaging 21 points tonight. But most impressive to me, you look at the last couple of games, 14 rebound career high again tonight in double digits with rebounds. Is this something that he has made a concerted effort to sort of adapt to his game and add to his repertoire? Or is this something out of necessity? Or is it just a fluke?
Well, I don't know if it's a fluke. I mean, he said, I believe it was after the Knicks game, you know, he was asked about his rebounding. He said it's just all effort, and you have to agree. It's like, if the Celtics are going to play small, they need someone besides Horford to be, you know, a presence on the glass. Did I think it was going to be Jason Tatum averaging 10 rebounds a game? Absolutely not. But he's gone against some pretty good front courts. I mean, you're a Philly that has Embiid and Saric and things like that. You know, you have Toronto that has Valanciunas and Ibaka, and then New York. They don't really – I mean, Enes Kanter gets rebounds, but, you know, they're probably the weakest front line we've seen. And then tonight with Jonathan Isaac and Vucevic, I mean, he's getting these double-digit rebounds against legit front lines. And, you know, you almost try to understand it because he's still – he's not the biggest dude still, but he's just – he has the effort. He's making a concerted, you know, dedication to the defensive glass. And that's the key to this team. If they can clean up on the defensive glass and get in transition, that's when the offense eases up because you can find Jaylen for layups, you get Kyrie in transition, Gordon, you know, easy corner threes. That's what we need to see from them moving forward.
All right, you find his stuff at Barstool Sports. You find him on Twitter, at Stool Greeny. Dan, thanks again for staying up very late with us here on Late Night.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, there he goes. Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports. It is Sports Radio WEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, I promise we'll take your phone call. So I see you there. Hang on the line. We will talk about this Boston Celtics team with you guys. And at some point in the final hour of the program, we will start to talk about the Boston Red Sox, as let's face it, it is now officially Tuesday morning and the World Series, it starts today. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is Late Night right here, Sports Radio WEI. A big thank you goes out to Dan Greenberg. You guys can read his stuff on Barstool Sports. You find his stuff on Twitter. Follow him at Stool Greeny. He's always great, and he helps me sort of just take my thoughts, and he explains himself in such an articulate way. And he's such a Celtics fan, and that's what I love about him. He got his gig. He got his job that, by the way, if you don't know, big congratulations goes out to Dan. In the last month, he was hired by Barstool full-time. So he's truly living the dream. He no longer has to work in the cube and do the Barstool stuff part-time and try to hide it from his bosses like everybody does. He does it full-time now, and he gets to write about the NBA and write about the Celtics full time. And I'm sure he would much rather be writing about stuff that's positive right now about this Celtics team. Unfortunately, that's just not the case. And I don't expect it to be the case, at least consistently, for at least the first 2 months of the season. And I've been very consistent about that take for the last 3 months here. I didn't see it. When you look at the condensed schedule here, you look at the condensed preseason, you look at the way the NBA is condensed the training camp portion of the schedule. It's just not what it used to be. And when you've got two all-star caliber players coming back off significant injuries. And then when you add the third guy in there, Daniel Theis, nobody talks about Theis, but Theis is very much a rotational player on this team, somebody that this team counts on for 20 minutes a night, you know, and somebody that this Celtics team missed last year. But because they missed him, that again opened up additional minutes, additional opportunities for guys like Semi Ojeleye, for guys like Gershon Yabusele. And now those guys are essentially forced out of the lineup. We've seen very few minutes from Semi Ojeleye as compared to what he earned last year. And that's just another product of having these three guys, not just two, but these three guys that are all rotational players take up significant minutes. Now, I feel like this Celtics team will be better off in the long run for adding two All-Stars and for getting Daniel Theis, who's a pretty good player, back in the lineup. But if you expected it to go off without a hitch, if you expected it to be seamless, I'm sorry, but you're just sadly mistaken. So it is Sports Radio, WEEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. There is room for you at 617-779-7937. Let's get right out to the phones. Let's go to Jay. Jay's in New Bedford. Jay, you're next up here on WEEI.
What's going on, dude?
Hey, Jay. Thanks for holding on, man.
Yeah, no problem. Nah, I don't know. I mean, that guy before me on from Boston, he definitely brought up a lot of big topics about, you know, them taking, like, contested shots and not getting to the line. And they look sloppy compared, you know. The thing is, to me, though, like, it's so early, obviously. Like, they literally haven't played, whatever, 5% of the season. But, like, you know, they'll get it on track. It's such a long year. Teams go on, whatever, 10-game win streaks all the time. It's just, it's how the NBA is, like. And I think that once they gain that chemistry, you know, of adding Haywood back this year, because obviously you look at Tatum and, you know, Brown and Smart and Rozier off the bench, and you said Theis, you know, going down, that was a big hit. But, you know, those guys were stepping up when it mattered. Baines, you know,
yep,
doing what they had to do.
No, you're right. You're 1,000% right, Jay. They did what they had to do last year, and because of them, this team experienced a significant playoff run that they probably weren't ready for, but they were able to get there anyways. And now you've got to readjust to having these guys back. And you know, it affects everybody. It's not just, you know, we look at it from the perspective of Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward specifically, and we talk about, you know, what it's like for them to come back from their injuries and, you know, what they've got to do to work themselves back into NBA shape. But
they should be fine, though. Honestly, I mean, the all-star caliber players, you know, and they should get right. And they should – that's the one thing, though. It's like you were saying, too, they got split up minutes. They have all these guys. But they have the deep – in my opinion, they have one of the biggest depth benches in the league when everyone's healthy and everything. And they all play, you know, the way they've always been playing, you know, the last couple of years. They're a tough team. They're a rebuilding team that – literally surprised everybody, I feel like, you know.
Well, the other part of this, Jay, though, is they're the hunted this year, right? So you can read about it on WEEI.com right now. Josue Pavone wrote something tonight for the website, but the Celtics are really, they're experiencing this for the first time. So when you are the hunted, you're the sexy pick to be the Eastern Conference representative in the finals. You know, when you play a team like the Orlando Magic, who's not expected to be a playoff team, they're going to come and punch you as best they can. And the Celtics, like you just said, Jay, you just said the Celtics were sort of overachievers the last couple of years during their rebuild, right? Well, that's not this team anymore. So now the Celtics aren't doing the hunting. They're the hunted.
Their favorites, yeah. They're the team that everyone looks at that could, you know, beat Golden State, to be honest, in my opinion, too. In a seven-game series, you know, you look at that Celtics team, man, it's like they haven't – I mean, I know they lost to Cleveland last year, but it's like they haven't let us down. They've been overachieving, and it's fun to watch. That's really what it comes down to. But it's like you said, now they're a contender now. They're a top-four team in the league. They got to get it done.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
you're right.
Honestly, I want to say, too, I'm a Knicks fan. I love the Celtics. I know. Terrible. We got a lot of – tough years ahead. I like Kevin Knox, though.
Listen, but, were you one of the Knicks fans? Were you convinced that there was a legit shot at Kyrie going home to New York?
No. And honestly, I live in New Bedford, Mass. So it's like, you know, watching that, it's like, why would he even want to leave the situation he's in? You know, like to go to New York. It's not like he's that far from Jersey anyway.
You're a rational Knicks fan. Those guys are few and far between.
I don't like the free agents. I like what they're doing. Even if they suck, they're rebuilding the right way. Goodbye, Phil Jackson. Thank God. As much as I respect him, goodbye. Melo, he's one of my favorites of all time, but it didn't work out. He's a selfish player. You know, look at his situation. Come off the bench in Houston now. It's like, whatever. Yeah. I mean, the hell with the Knicks. This is Boston right here.
You got something else on the Red Sox or what, Jay?
Yeah, I do, definitely. I mean, I'm a big – Sox fan all year long, but they've been it's just if they can keep that rotation going, you know, Price pitches well again, which I doubt he will, in my opinion. But you know, it's good to see that they kind of had it going, but that bullpen is just it's iffy. As long as they put up, you know, 6 runs a game like they have been all year, I mean, it shouldn't be a big deal. But I mean, the Dodgers are a different. They're something else, and they've proved that. So,
well, the Dodgers are much better. And listen, Jay, I appreciate the phone call. The Dodgers are better than their 92 wins indicate. So Red Sox fans look at the Dodgers' 92 wins, and they look at the Red Sox with 108 wins, and they think, okay, Sox in five. And I've heard a lot of that around here. And look, I think the Dodgers are going to put up a hell of a fight, and this thing has potentially got 7 games written all over it. And you mentioned David Price. Well, and we'll talk about this coming up in the second hour of the program. But if I were the Red Sox, and again, Cora has now officially announced that Price is going to get Game 2, I feel like that's a mistake. I would start Nathan Eovaldi or Rick Porcello in Game 2, if only because the one thing that we learned about David Price was the one thing we talked about here going into the playoffs. Look, David Price pitched his best game of his career, his best playoff performance of his career in a controlled setting, all right? Houston plays in a controlled atmosphere where he doesn't have to worry about the weather. He doesn't have to worry about humidity. He doesn't have to worry about allergies. He doesn't have to worry about cold temperatures. And I feel like, again, this is just another example of Red Sox fans or Boston fans in general being short-sighted because we only see the things that we want to see. And we only remember the things that we want to remember. And that's why Celtics fans go back and we talk about this awesome run that the Celtics had last year through the conference finals, but nobody wants to look at this in-depth picture of what happened in the final 5 minutes of Game 7 in the conference finals. And that's where you miss Kyrie Irving. That's where you finally miss Gordon Hayward, those closing 5 minutes, right? And everybody wants to look at David Price's performance and say, okay, he's finally got off the schneid. He's finally, you know, got the monkey off his back and he's going to perform and perform well. But nobody wants to remember David Price's own words going back to just this April. All right, so this baseball season, we're not digging up something he said years ago. We're not reinventing something where he might have meant something else. He was very clear on this back in April when he said that he was struggling then because it was cold at Fenway. And he said forever, going back to his childhood, he has had blood circulation problems in his fingers and his toes when it's cold out. So coming up in about 5 minutes here, you'll hear me do the trending, but tonight its temperature is in the low to mid 40s. Last night, I went to Canobie Lake with my family after the Patriots game, and before coming here, it was about 36 degrees out. Everybody was bundled up in legitimate winter gear just to walk around outside. And it's going to be cold all week long. Look at the low temperatures. Some forecasts have lows in the 20s this week. It is going to be cold. Frigidly cold at Fenway, especially for October. So again, if you're going to throw David Price out there when it's in the 30s and low 40s, don't you sort of have to expect that David Price is going to have the same problems he claims that he's had over the course of his lifetime? I mean, is this blood circulation problem, unless it's fake, unless he made it up, unless it was an excuse as to why he was struggling earlier on in the season, and I don't want to say that about him. I want to take him for his word, especially when he's talking about medical situations, right? And he claimed that this was a medical issue. Why wouldn't you throw him in L.A.? I know it's not a controlled atmosphere, but at the very least, you're not going to deal with frigidly cold temperatures. Isn't Rick Porcello or isn't Nathan Eovaldi? Hasn't Nathan Eovaldi earned something throughout this playoff run? Hasn't he proven that he has been the Red Sox's most consistent starter throughout this playoff run? And real quick, you mentioned the bullpen, but the bullpen issues that this team had and the bullpen issues that we thought were going to be the end of this team's playoff run, really that hasn't happened. The bullpen's become one of this team's biggest areas of strength throughout this postseason run. And it's because of the masterful way that Alex Cora has reinvented the bullpen by throwing starters out there occasionally and by throwing Nathan Eovaldi and Rick Porcello and even Chris Sale out there in the bullpen just for an inning or two of work spread out in the right moments. What that's done is helped this team bridge the gap between the sixth inning and the ninth inning. And having that additional player, having that additional starter go out there and fulfill that role has really taken some of the areas of weakness on this team and made it areas of strength. And while that isn't something that's sustainable throughout the entirety of a regular season, it is something that you can do for a month playoff run. And I feel like that's one of the biggest things that Alex Cora has done. It's one of the biggest adjustments and best changes that he's made in somehow miraculously taking this area of incredible weakness for the Red Sox and making it an area of incredible strength. It is Sports Radio WEEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This is Late Night. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about the Celtics. And, of course, we'll start to mix in some Red Sox. It's about 1 in the morning on Tuesday morning. The World Series, it starts today. It starts tonight. And we'll talk about it when we come back right here, Sports Radio WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.